The next drug class we're going to talk about is cephalosporins. Cephalosporins also contain beta-lactam, so they work very similarly to penicillin. They have more resistance to penicillinase or beta-lactamase than penicillins do. So they are able to kill some bacteria that produce penicillinase. They're fairly broad spectrum, and they don't have very much toxicity. They work the same way as penicillin does. There you go. All right, now there are four generations. Generations 1, 2, 3, and 4. Got it? Now, notice that there are no numbers on these bullets. Okay? These are four trends. All four trends occur in each generation. Does that make sense? Okay? So, as you go from first generation to fourth generation, you have increased gram-negative activity, decreased gram-positive activity, increased resistance to beta-lactamase, and increased ability to cross the blood-brain barrier. Does that make sense? All right, let's put that into perspective for a moment. All right. Okay, what are our four trends? Okay, so we increase gram negative, and we decrease gram positive, and we increase resistance to the beta-lactamase, and we increase the blood-brain barrier crossing. Now, we've got how many generations? Generation 1, generation 2, 3, and four. Can you even read that at all? No, it doesn't matter. For our purposes, it doesn't matter. All right, so all four of these occur simultaneously in all four generations. So which has more ability to kill gram-positive, generation 1 or generation 3? Which one has more ability to kill gram-positive, generation 1 or generation 3? Okay, let's think about this for a moment. As you go from generation 1 to generation 4, you have less ability to kill gram-positive. So which has more ability to kill gram-positive, generation 1 or generation 3? Generation 1. Which has more ability to kill gram-positive, generation 2 or generation 4? Okay, does that make sense? Is there anyone confused by that? Okay, let's try it again with the first one. So as we go from generation 1 to generation 4, there's more gram-negative activity. So which one is able to kill gram-negative bacteria better, generation 1 or generation 4? Kelly, why? Okay. So now if we ask the same question with gram-positive, which one has more ability to kill, generation 1 or generation 4? Generation 1. All right? If we use the resistance to beta-lactamase, which one has more resistance to beta-lactamase, generation 2 or generation 3? Generation 3. Which one crosses the blood-brain barrier better, generation 1 or generation 3? Okay, does that make sense? If you know the four trends, no? Okay. Is anyone else who's confused? All right, we'll talk to you after class. On the test, you're going to have a question that's going to ask you something like, which of the generations works best against gram-positive? And so, for gram-positive, generation 1 is the best. It'll ask you, you might have a question like, which of these is best at crossing the blood-brain barrier? Which would be the correct answer? 4. Okay. Only it won't be that simple because I'm going to actually give you drug names. So you have to know which drug name belongs to which generation. Ah, Dr. Heyman. But don't worry, there's only 7 drugs you have to remember. You'll see them a lot in the hospital. You really will. All right. There's only one drug in the fourth generation. Blah, blah, blah. You can read that on your own. Okay. Now, all of them are eliminated by the kidney, except for these two. This is not a drug you need to remember. So ceftriaxone, you need to remember, is eliminated by the liver. No, see, they're all by the kidney except ceftriaxone. Okay. All right. Okay. Do you want me to read the slide, or do you just go beep when you're done? Okay, we're done. All right, next. Adverse events, or adverse effects. The most common one is allergy. There's how much cross-reactivity with penicillin? 5 to 10%. These ones can cause bleeding because they interfere with vitamin K metabolism, which means they can also interact with what drug? Warfarin. You guys are so like, just bam. The ones that are given IV can cause thrombophlebitis, which means clots in the vein. So you want to dilute and infuse slowly to avoid that. All right. Now, first and second generation in the hospital, are typically going to be used prophylactically. What does that mean? Prevent what? Infection. So if I give you a question where the person has no fever, has no high blood count, do they have an infection or they have no signs of infection? No signs of infection. So which is going to be more likely to be used? What generations? First and second. If I give you a patient on the test who's got high blood cell counts, has a positive culture, has a fever, which generation are they more likely to get? Going to get? Third or fourth? Okay, now, ceftriaxone, we got to talk about it for a moment. Ceftriaxone, also known as Rocephin, is one of the most common drugs that you are going to see in the hospital, and it's one of those common drugs that you will see in the emergency room. The reason for that is one 500 milligram dose given in the butt muscle is all the dose you get. So, a patient comes in with an infection, give them a shot of Rocephin, send them out the door. Got it? Now, it can also be given IV, and you'll see it used in the hospital to treat pneumonia that way, IV. But in the emergency room, a lot of times, give them 500 of Rocephin IM and send them out the door. All right, so the drugs you need to remember: cefalexin and cefazolin are first generation drugs. Cefuroxim, cefaclor, and ceftriaxone and ceftazidime. No, I'm sorry. Cefalexin, cefazolin, and cefuroxim are all first generation. Yes. Cefaclor, ceftriaxone, and ceftazidime are all third generation. And then cefepime is fourth generation.
So first, third,
and fourth. Did I? I didn't know. I'm just doing it wrong. I'm confusing myself. Yeah, I was right. I was right the first time. Cefalexin and cefazolin first. Cefuroxime and cefaclor second. Ceftriaxone, ceftazidine third. Yeah. See, I knew I wasn't that dumb. Cefepime fourth. So 2-2-2-1. 2 from the first, 2 from the second, 2 from the third, 1 from the fourth, because there's only one. Whew, okay. You need to remember those. Because on the test, we're asking you which of these drugs would be best at penetrating the blood-brain barrier. I'm not going to say first generation, second generation, third generation. I'm going to put down cefalexin, cefuroxime, ceftriaxone. Does that make sense? All right. If I ask which of the following drugs be given to the patient who is asymptomatic and has no blood, no fever, no blood counts, it would be one of these first four, first and second generation, right? If the person already has symptoms of an infection, it would be one of these bottom three. So yeah, I'm already telling you how to pass this test. No, I won't. If I do that, it would be a check all that apply, but I don't think I have any that do that. I hope I don't have any that do that. All right. Okay, this one is going to go really quickly. Carbapenems. Also beta-lactam drugs. They have the highest, the broadest spectrum, which means that they work against more bacteria than any other antibiotic that we know of. They are IV and IM only, and they're typically used for what we call a mixed infection. What does that mean? You have more than one type of bug in the same infection. The drug names, imipenem, meropenem, and ertapenem. And I'll bring in a scrubs tomorrow that has imipenem featured in it. How's that? Make you happy, Joe? All right. Told you that would go quick.
Do we need to know all of these?
No. Well, what you need to know is that if you see penem, that it's a carbapenem, that it's a. Now, once you know what's a carbapenem, what are the two things you need to know about them?
Broad
spectrum, mixed infections, and then IV only would be nice, or IM IV only would be nice to know. So the most important thing is mixed infection, broad spectrum. Next one, we have Monobactam. Monobactam is the class. There's only one drug, Aztreonam, and it's very, very narrow spectrum. Only does gram-negative bacilli. It is highly resistant to beta-lactamase. So the only thing you need to know about Aztreonam for the test is that it's very, very narrow and highly resistant to beta-lactamase. All right, that's it. Now we get to the fun stuff. Vancomycin. All right, vancomycin does not contain beta-lactam. It works completely differently. We use it for MRSA, and we use it for pseudomembranous colitis. That sounds fun, Dr. Heyman. I've never heard of that. What's that? What? Okay, Clostridium difficile. Did you talk about that in micro? What did you learn about it in micro? What? Okay, it's stinky. It's what? It's an enterobacter. What does that mean? It lives in the intestine. Okay. What else? What else? Why do we call it difficile, do you think? Because it's difficile to treat. All right, so it's a normal bacteria that lives in your gut. And when we give a person antibiotics, let's say you have an ear infection, and we give you what will we give you for an ear infection? Amoxicillin, unless you're allergic. So we give you the amoxicillin, and you get somewhat better, but you don't get all the way better. So we give you another dose, and you don't quite recover all the way. So then we switch you over to the Z-Pak. And after a while, what have we been doing to the bacteria in your body?
Killing
them all off, except for the ones that are resistant. So C. diff is a very resistant bacteria. So it tends to hang around long after all the other ones are dead. Now there's no more competition, and it starts growing like crazy and causes a condition called pseudomembranous colitis. It causes a very nasty smelling diarrhea and is quite difficult to treat. So we use vancomycin, among other things, to treat that. Now, vancomycin is not absorbed by mouth well at all. So if we're giving it by mouth, what are we using it for? We're using it to treat the C. diff. That's the only time it should ever be given PO. What's the only reason vancomycin should be given PO?
For C. diff.
For C. diff. What's the only reason vancomycin should ever be used PO?
For C. diff.
C. diff. Now, how could I ask that on a question on the test? Okay. Your patient has C. diff, which is the appropriate medication. I could have vancomycin IV and vancomycin PO, right? What's another way I could ask that question? I could ask it the opposite of how I just said it. So your patient has... No, your patient has, let's say, MRSA-related pneumonia. And which of these would be appropriate? You would not choose vancomycin PO. Okay, so you could ask it forward, and you can also ask it backwards. All right. It has a very low therapeutic range. What does that mean? It's very easy to go from not working enough to toxic. So as a result, we have to monitor the results very carefully, or monitor the levels very carefully. It's going to be infused over 60 minutes to help prevent toxicity. That's a long time. Most drugs are infused over 15 to 30 minutes. You monitor the levels. Now, if you want to take a trough level, when are you going to take that level? When are you going to take the blood? Say again? Okay. When you start the IV? They've already gotten a dose. Okay, right before you give the next dose. That's when it's going to be at its lowest. If you want a peak, when are you going to do the peak?
Immediately.
Right after 60 minutes. Okay, so you're going to take a peak level when? 60 minutes after starting, because that's when it's all in. When are you going to do the trough? Right before the next dose. Now, these potentially toxic things. The first one is? Ototoxic is ear. Now, there are other drugs that are also ototoxic. If you combine the two, guess what? More risk for ototoxicity. Now, what's going to happen to our person with ototoxicity? Are they just going to stop hearing? Nope. They might have balance problems, but they will definitely have what kind of hearing problem? Starts with T. Tinnitus. Now, what is tinnitus?
Ringing
in the ears. How many of you, sometime over the past year, went to a club that was really loud, and after you got done, like that night, you're trying to go to bed, and all you hear is this hollow, like, sound in your ear? Okay. You've just experienced what you're going to give this patient for the rest of their life. Yeah. Can also cause thrombophlebitis, which is why we give it over 60 minutes. Now, the one thing that is not on here that needs to be on there is nephrotoxicity, which means toxicity of the
kidney.
All right. We'll talk more about vancomycin in general a little bit later. So we're doing this backwards. We do antibiotics 1, and then maybe antibiotics 2, and then we talk about introduction to antibiotics. It works better this way, trust me. All right, tacoplanin. Tacoplanin is a newer drug. It's been around for like 5 years now, but they still call it newer. And it's active against MRSA, has fewer side effects than vancomycin, and it can be given IM instead of IV. But we're saving it for when vancomycin doesn't work anymore. Ta-da! Look at that, we have 5 minutes. So, let's talk about a few things that I need to go back over and for your test. What did we say penicillin G and penicillin VK can be used for? What bug in particular? Not Pseudomonas. Flesh-eating bacteria. Strep what? Pyogenes. Streptococcus pyogenes. What's the other name for that? Sometimes it's called group A strep. And sometimes it's called beta hemolytic strep. All three are the same thing. Now, how many of you ever watched Little House on the Prairie when you were younger? Come on, admit it. Joe. All right, now, the older sister went blind. Do you remember that? Yeah. Why did she go blind? Scarlet fever, that's right. And what caused her scarlet fever? Strep. Now, if a person gets streptococcus, like say they just get an ordinary old strep throat, and we don't treat it with antibiotics, what are most people going to do? Get better on their own, no problems. 10% of the people that we do not treat, however, will go on to get acute rheumatic fever, which can lead to rheumatoid arthritis and some other heart problems. Well, and heart problems. Strep throat can also spread to the endocardium, and it can also spread to a person's heart valves. So it's important that we treat people who have strep throat. And what's the drug that we can use? Penicillin G or VK. And if we're going to give it PO, we would give VK. So on your test, you're going to have a question which says something like, how many people do you think would get acute rheumatic fever if we don't treat them? Okay, you might have a question like that. You might have a question that would say, your patient has penicillin VK, or sorry, your patient has strep throat. What should we do with them? Nothing. Or various things. And you get to choose what's appropriate. Question there? Or just twirling the... Okay. All right. Si, senor. Si, senor.
For the test, are you going to give us, like, are you going to say strep pneumonia, or are you going to, like, which name are you
going to... Okay. Streptococcus pneumoniae is a separate type of streptococcus, and that's different. So what I'm talking about there is Streptococcus pyogenes, which is what causes strep throat, scarlet fever, and necrotizing fasciitis.
Does it still say no to Vanco?
Yes. Yes. All right, let's talk about intro to antibiotics for a moment. All right, let's talk about... All right, this is in your intro to antibiotics notes. Now, factors that influence resistance. The first one is the use of broad versus narrow spectrum. We want to use narrow spectrum whenever possible. So that way we only affect a few bacteria instead of affecting a lot of bacteria. Supra-infection is what pseudomembranous colitis is. You get an infection from an opportunistic bug. Then we have the CDC's 12-step program to reduce vancomycin, but also other antibiotic resistance. So the first one is immunize. If we can prevent the infection from ever happening, we won't have to use an antibiotic to treat it, right? Next one is get IVs out. IVs are a direct access for bacteria to get into a vein. Now, is it easier to go through an IV to get into the bloodstream, or is it easier to penetrate the skin? Easier to go through an IV.
What's the name of this one on the index?
Introduction to antibiotics or antimicrobials. The next one is ID consult. This one is broken a lot in the hospital. Anytime someone is treated for an infection, they should get an infectious disease consult. That's what the CDC recommends. Next, we have contamination versus infection. So they really weren't infected. You just contaminated the sample. So try and cut down on contamination. So if you have a contaminated sample, you're going to be treating a patient who doesn't really need to be treated. And in doing that, you're going to create resistance. Next one is colonization versus infection. How would you know if someone is colonized versus infected? Okay, so symptoms versus just, if you culture a wound and you see that it grows something, that's colonized. If you culture the wound and it grows something and the patient has symptoms or signs, what are they? What? Okay, fever. High white blood cell count. Pain, redness, swelling. Does that sound familiar? If they have those things, then treat it. If all they are colonized, then treat it topically. Say no to. Now, what this means is you don't say, sorry, can't give you Vanco. We say no to Vanco here. What it means is you as a nurse have the authority to question a vancomycin order. Why are we giving this? And if it's not a good reason, we refer that doctor back to, you should get an ID consult on this. Now, you as a little nursing student probably don't want to take on that burden by yourself. And the nurse you're working with might not want to take it on by themselves either. So guess what you have to root for you? Nurse manager. So, or charge nurse. All right. Stop when the infection is gone. So monitor the blood counts, monitor their cultures, and when it goes down to there's no more culture, there's no more bug, stop the antibiotic. Isolate the pathogen, which means don't spread it to other people. What's the way we're going to do this? What's the number one way we're going to do this? Wash our freaking hands. Okay. Now, this is part of tech skills, but what the heck? We'll give you a preview. What are the four elements needed to wash hands well? Okay. So we'll start with the very first one you need. Water, then soap, then friction, and then time. Those are the four elements needed for good hand washing. And don't worry, that'll be on your final in tech skills. All right, the last one is break the chain. Wash your hands. All right. I hope you guys had fun. It was a fun first day for me. Don't worry, it will get better once we're done with antibiotics.